Okay, we're now recording, and I'll be posting that later today. Welcome to the Aries Working Group call this afternoon. There was not a morning call this morning, so if you showed up and it wasn't happening, then it's not just you. We are talking about RFC progression today with some RFCs moving through the process. We have a demo of predefined identities in the protocol test suite. We have DIDCOM message delivery expectations and other stuff going on, so it should be a good day. Please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Let's be excellent to each other and avoid doing illegal things. Meeting notes, if you want to add yourself to the attendees list, that helps people connect. If you say something in the meeting or something else, that helps helps them connect with you to talk further about stuff. BCGov, do we have any BCGov folks here yet? I don't know that I see any yet. The expected signing of the MOU for this is August 6th, which was yesterday. So that may have happened. But don't have an update from that. Any other announcements before we continue that we should be bringing up? No announcements. Okay, we have plenty of time here in the next couple of minutes to make that happen. Also, introductions. Is there anyone that's new on the call today that has not previously announced themselves or introduced themselves that would like to? This is voluntary, of course. But if you'd like to, I'll give you a second. You can speak up and introduce yourself. Okay, if you'd like to later, you're welcome to or another day. Related meetings review, we did not have a morning meeting. It's every other week, and this is the off week. Are there any updates from IRSA that we need to share? Any updates on the Indie Maintainers call? Man, where's like a dead crowd today? Any updates for the Indie Maintainers call?
This isn't exactly an update, but I'd like to, it's close in spirit. So let me just make this announcement. In the Aries RFC's repo, I started adding some metadata about implementations. And so basically I've gone into, let's say, the RFC about credential exchange. And at the very bottom, Stephen Curran ran a script that added a table of information about what the implementations are of every RFC. And initially, his information just created an empty table. But I went in and started saying, well, I know that this particular code base implements this thing. So I just started making notes. And this thing that I added is the basis. So you can see an empty table there that Sam's scrolling to. It's the basis for the information that's in the index. So there's one that's a little bit more interesting. What I'd like to ask is that people who own these code bases do a pass through where they say, well, we implement this, we implement that, and go add the thing that you are maintaining, the code base, into the list at the bottom of the appropriate RFCs, and this will make the index that we generate a lot more interesting.
I was going to talk about that later, Daniel. You jumped on it, though. I appreciate your work, though. The one thing that I'll mention is that the goal is to be consistent in the naming of these things so that we can auto-generate some indexes and some tables and some other things that might be useful in the future. But yes, excellent work by both Stephen Kern and Daniel Hardman. Also, we'll talk about this in a minute, but we have some new shiny looks to the index page that includes a link, the count of implementations, and a link directly to the implementation section. So like here's the trusting protocol, and if I open that directly, it will take me to this and drop me down to the bottom so that I can quickly see who's implementing that. So very cool stuff. There's also some tagging stuff that's been added, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Sorry. The consistency of the naming there is actually enforced by a unit test. So if you aren't consistent in your names. You call something the street cred framework in one place and the street cred ID framework in another place or something, the unit test will complain. The description that I started pasting is actually probably wrong, because I pasted the same description of, like, I'll use street cred as an example again. I pasted the same description into every table where I put street cred in. And in fact, what should be there is a description of how street cred implements that specific RFC, like full support or partial support, or we only implemented this one sub feature or whatever, not a general description of street cred in every table. But I was just trying to get data in there, which is why it my copy paste was really repetitive.
It's a start though, and we can update that. The other thing that I'll mention is that if you're making an update to the implementers table across the, you don't have to do a separate or a separate PR for all of those. You can kind of do them all at once. And those are really easy to approve when you're, you know, adding your, adding or correcting entries in that table. So if you isolate those to a separate PR, but put them all, you can put a whole bunch of them in a single PR, then it's easy for us to, as the maintainers of the RFC repo, it's easy for us to accept those.
Hey, Sam, going back to the previous topic on the calendar, you said that the morning Aries call is only every other week.
Yes.
So the Hyperledger calendar has it every week.
Oh.
So if you download
this morning, am I wrong? Or did it not happen?
No, it didn't happen, but it's on the calendar. And if you look, okay. If you download the Hyperledger calendar and add it to your calendar, it shows up every week, not every other week.
Okay. So yes, we'll have to fix that on the Hyperledger calendar. I think we have, Richard, that's what your name is. Richard, is that something you can take a look at to try and get corrected? I saw you unmute, but I don't
know. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, apologies. I'm late. But there's a number of places where the calendar's messed up. I'll double check the Hyperledger, the Aries working group call. I thought I had that one right, but the Indie Maintainers calendar specifically is incorrect. We did decide in the last call that we want to start meeting more frequently, so there will be a call every week rotating between morning and afternoon in the U.S. Or rotating between Europe and Asia and Australia and New Zealand. So I need people who are interested, you need to follow the wiki. The wiki's right for both of those calls, and we'll all work on getting the Hyperledger calendar update date.
Thanks for doing that, Richard. Other things before we get to upcoming releases and work updates.
I'll just throw out that on the implementers call this last Thursday, Stephen Gubler demoed the GitLab CI/CD migration for the Indie SDK. We don't have a recording up for that, but we will in the near future, hopefully. So if you're interested in that, you can check out the recording, and I'll get a link posted in the notes for that.
Awesome. Thanks for bringing that up, Daniel. And thanks to all those, Stephen and others, working on the CI/CD pipeline stuff. That'll be really helpful going forward. Okay. Upcoming releases and work updates. This is not incredibly updated from last week, so we'll see what's here. Do we have anyone from the DC Gov team want to talk about new work? I don't see them. They must have a meeting or something. Okay, so we're not going to get an update from them today. There was a rousing discussion last Wednesday morning's call about SDK design. Is there anything that we want to touch on the migration topic there?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Sorry, I'm having audio problems. The BC Gov team is currently in the middle of what they call a lab and learn, focused on retiring Mr. Login. They're introducing scores of people, actually. I think they have 70 people in the room and 60 people online or something. 50 people in the room and 70 online. Anyway, so that's what they're doing at the moment. It'll be interesting. As for the architecture of the future Aries SDK and the Indie Resolver. I have created, we're going to make that a main discussion of next Wednesday's Aries A call. And I have up the agendas in the wiki with notes as people keep circulating documents, and they're all useful. So I've just been throwing them in the agenda so people who want to prepare for that call can review those in advance of the call. And I expect it to be a fairly interesting. So far, I've learned a lot from the conversation, and I'm excited for us to continue.
Awesome. I know there's lots of passionate ideas there, and that's good. We want to take the best of the understanding of what we all have and put that together. So I'd like to give a big thumbs up to working and talking together to figure things out. And I know there's been a lot of work by lots of members of the community to try and move that work forward. So appreciate that. Do we have any static agent Python updates, Daniel?
Nothing different from last week, though I am continuing to work on it. So I guess maybe we'll have some more updates next time.
Perfect. Aries SDK Ruby. Any updates there from different from last week?
Yes. Hey, Sam, this is Jack. So I did actually, there's a PR actually waiting, and I can't review it myself, even though I'm the person of the group. So I pushed it to Richard. So it's just a waiting. Richard, you're
yeah. And I apologize, Jack. I'm not a Ruby expert, so I was trying to find somebody else who knows what they're doing. But the Nathan is – I wanted to discuss with Nathan the specific corner case for process, and maybe it's something we decide on a call since Nathan's on vacation. But in a situation like Ruby, we currently have one person bootstrapping that environment, bootstrapping that code. Unless somebody else wants to be a co-maintainer in the short term, maybe we should just lower the requirement and Jack doesn't need reviewers for now.
I don't know the answer. Do we have anyone else that is willing to be a maintainer of the Ruby repo? That would easily solve the problem if there was.
And again, this is just an initial using Helix for a Rust bridge. It doesn't use threading, and it only implements right now the initial parts of wallet and the pool.
Hey, we'll bring that. Awesome. Let me. So.
Yeah. So the PR is waiting there, Sam. So no worries.
We'll get someone. We'll figure that out over the next couple of days.
All right. Thanks, Jess.
For what it's worth, I like Richard's idea of lowering the bar. If we don't have another obvious maintainer in the short term, I don't want to hold up progress when somebody's written some good code and there's just nobody who's up to speed to review it.
You're quite generous there, Daniel, as far as good code, but thank you.
Well, it's some code instead of no code, and that's good.
It needs to be refactored, guys. Okay, so take that into account, right? It's still Indie SDK flavored and so forth. So, but I took lead from the Python SDK that will be done. It's better important to move it over first than do the refactoring.
Right. Yes. It's messy because we can't just bend time and get the other stuff done first. But forward movement here will allow an easier transition. As the split stuff happens. So yes, I second that or third that rather to lower the bar there. Is that a policy change we need to make, or can we just agree that can happen?
That's where I was deferring to Nathan. So Nathan's back tomorrow. We can talk to him, or I can talk with Rye directly. But knowing that that's the consensus of this group, I can push it forward. And I apologize, Jack, that I didn't get it done earlier.
Yeah, no worries.
If you will do that, Richard, I think you can take our consensus and push that forward. And please reach out if I can help. Okay. Aries Protocol Test Suite. Is there any updates there, Daniel? I know you're on the schedule for a demo a little later, so you probably don't need to say anything now that you're going to say then.
Right. Yeah. I'll demo what I've got. So.
Cool. Okay. So there are updates, and we're going to get a demo of that in a little bit. Any other thing that we did not cover? Okay. Is there any changes that need to be made to the agenda before we dive in? All right, then. So there's a couple of, as we're going to get into RFC review real quick, there's some proposed status changes that we want to talk about. I did, again, want to draw attention to the work that's been done on this. If you're going to make a contribution to this, there's a script that will auto-generate this file with the appropriate updates, and there are also test suites, or there's a test suite that you can run locally and will run when you commit by Circle CI. So if you want to avoid the delay of Circle CI, you can run those locally. And you'll need to update this to commit as well. And I'd like to make that bar a little easier so you don't actually have to have a Python environment to do it. But in the meantime, it's allowed us to have a much more organized RFC repo. And we appreciate Daniel's recent updates and making that happen. One quick thing that I don't believe we need to talk about a lot. In a previous meeting a couple of times ago, we talked about how I had screwed up, me, Sam personally had screwed up, and the DID exchange protocol kind of migrated from the connection protocol. I have repented, and so now there is the DID exchange protocol is actually listed under proposed. That's been downgraded from accepted. The accepted one is the connection protocol that has a variety of implementations, and this allows us to keep them separate and find the documentation for the connection protocol as we discuss further changes that we want to make to the next iteration. And we anticipate that the DID exchange protocol is going to will supersede that and will lead to the retiring of the connection protocol as we move to that. But then we can have the topic about what we want to accept separately from the status issue. So we talked about doing that, and I went ahead and did that to kind of clean up the process and make sure I understood it better. Any comments on that before I move along?
One other update is that the Everton team did get the pull request in for 0037 and 38, I think, 36, the credential exchange ones, to move them from proposed to accepted.
Yes, that's on our list to talk about in just a minute too.
Okay.
So we have some moving forward, but I wanted to bring that up is that those two couple changes had been made. So weirdly, the connection protocol has a higher number because of how this worked than the DID exchange protocol, but that seemed a lot less messy than trying to give the lower number to the connection protocol. So that's there and listed appropriately in the accepted list. So on the agenda, we have two where there are PRs in to change the status. And the first one is 36, the issue credential protocol. Actually, 36 is the issue credential and the present protocol change. There's a PR to change the status of both of those. And so that's what we'll talk about first. And in one of my tabs here, if I could get to the right place. So here is issue credential. This is the PR itself that changes both the present proof protocol and the issue credential protocol for the status changes, as well as the appropriate index changes for the auto-generated file. There is some conversation here, and it's a bummer that Stephen Curran is busy, although he's doing excellent work over there, because there's some arguments about whether this should in fact be accepted or not, given the difficulty that we had, or there are some of the conversations. Would anyone like to talk to these points or to bring up other opinions about these two RFCs?
I'd just like to say that making something accepted means that we are saying as a community that we think this should be a standards track document, and that people should start implementing it. It doesn't mean that it is a standard yet. It just means that we've agreed that conceptually this is the direction we want to head, and we're ready to start incubating it in our individual implementations. We intend to converge on it.
So practically speaking, Daniel, thank you for speaking up about that. So practically speaking, what effect does a breaking change have after it's been moved to accepted? Would that cause a version rev because now people have been writing code to it?
Yeah, I think that when something's in proposed status, we're a little bit more loosey-goosey. You're still proposing it and working on trying to get it the way you like it. But when it's in accepted status, then I think the notion is that the world is reading the doc and converging on it pretty deliberately, and therefore, you shouldn't change it in a way that violates SEMVER rules. And there's a whole
document in RFC 005 that talks about exactly what SEMVR rules protocols have to converge on. So if it's a protocol, then that's the case.
Right. The only thing here too was just trying to get the pictures to, I think the only requested change to the issue anyway was just to get the pictures to sort of line up. And I still feel like they don't.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is George. So it's not just the pictures, it's also the content of the textual content of the RFC. As I said in that that comment that you were just showing on your screen.
Right.
It just reads, it feels very rough, that RFC, in my opinion.
Do you have specific things that you think would decrease the roughness of it?
Well, for starters, it's relying a lot on, like I said, it's relying a lot on a specific implementation, and there's no real like description of why certain structures are the way they are, and there's a lot of fuzziness around some of the key structures that define how to specifically identify a credential, let's say in this case.
So to clarify, when you said one implementation, you didn't mean a code implementation, you meant a credential implementation.
I don't understand the question.
Well, in a code implementation.
Specifically, I'm referring to the fact that it's relying basically on Hyperledger Indy as an example.
Yes, but there's not one Hyperledger Indy implementation necessarily. So, so you're talking about the formats rather than used. For example, this stuff here talks about, well, here's the credential proposal you get from something. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And then, sure, but in that case, I think it's relatively complete in the sense that it points to the schema credential review, which further down is sort of well-defined, but I'm not quite sure. But I'm thinking more of, let's take a look at the request credential message, for example.
Let me find that real quick.
It's around the middle.
Request credential, yes?
Yeah, request credential. Right there. So, you see the contents of this attachment that we have here, mm-hmm. the Base64 contents. That's the key part of this message. And even that is not well defined. And all we have is an example in a specific implementation, in this case, libindy. So, you know, I'm wondering, I'm not entirely sure how this RFC lifecycle works, like when we get down to earth with the mechanics of it, how this message, which is not really a formally defining anything and just defining, it's just saying some sort of intention or action that it wants to do, but not really formally laying down any claims of actually how to do that.
So what I'm trying to guide, George, is the figuring out the concrete steps moving forward to resolve your concerns. And saying it's fuzzy is not super actionable. And so what I would like to do is get down to more specifically what you think ought to be changed, and then we can perhaps bring those up in issues to discuss those, or at least talk in the PR more directly about things that you think are missing or incorrect about the document before it would be accepted. So one of them is that, I mean, and we're still not quite to brass tacks here, but it sounds like what you're objecting to is that there's not a lot of formal definition for what as actually goes in these Base64 bytes for this particular ID. Or as it matches the MIME type or something else, so that we know more directly how to construct this as it applies to other credential designs besides Indy. That was a lot of words, but did I get a little closer to what you're going for?
You did get a little closer, and also I'm wondering if this RFC shouldn't just define a single portable standard across all agents, because I understand that this is one of the points of this project, essentially, is, you know, how to make agents talk to each other in an interoperable manner. And requesting credentials, I'm assuming, is I know it's a hard problem, but I'm assuming it falls under that category as well.
So you're implying that it doesn't serve anyone but Indy at this particular point?
Yes, exactly.
So that is a specific point I think you could bring up in an issue. I think that the people with the most opinions about it at the moment may not be here on this call, and so it's going to be hard to resolve during this call. But
I have an opinion I'd like to articulate if I could.
Please. Yep.
We had a discussion, I don't remember how long ago it was, but a while back, where we very deliberately chose to separate the message and communication about issuance of credentials or about requesting and providing presentations from the actual format of the credentials themselves. So the messages that are shown here very deliberately do not say anything about credential format. And that's because we want to allow credential formats to evolve independent from the protocol, which says in step one, you get this kind of message, and step two, you have to give back that kind of message. It felt to us like the evolution of credential formats needs to be independent. So I think that the lack of detail here is very deliberate. You could use the RFC as it's written to exchange credentials using a UPort-oriented ecosystem. You could do it using a JSON-LD-oriented ecosystem. You could do it using Indy. The people who wrote this provided an example, on, at least in the thing we're looking at right in the middle of the screen, of how you would attach this with attach a libIndy-style credential in this particular message. But the focus is not on the credential. It's on the message that conveys the credential. So I feel like the fuzziness that George is pointing out is mostly intentional and appropriate. There may be some cases where we do need to tighten them up, but I don't think as a general rule that the RFC is wrong-headed in not specifying that stuff.
So I'm not sure I'm not sure the subsequent action would be to include the reasoning in this RFC.
Yeah, for sure that if the RFC doesn't explain that, it needs to be explained. And I think we need to either do one of two things, go the direction that George said, which is tighten it up and provide a single concrete example and say, this is the way everybody should do it. Or my preference, go the other route and say, this workflow can be applied to any credentialing problem, no matter which ecosystem you're in. The only thing that's different is the payload of the attachments, and explain the reasoning behind it. I would prefer option two, and maybe if the authors of this RFC aren't in a hurry to do that, I can add it to my to-do list, and if I get there before somebody else does, I'll raise a PR against the PR.
I wonder if there's an option to do both. Meaning we make sure there's language in the RFC that talks about the fact that this RFC is not the location for what the contents of the message should be. And then we actually come up with a way to point for different implementations to an RFC that actually describes those, or some other documentation is necessary to describe what the actual contents are, so that the combination of those two documents provides you exactly what you need for a single implementation, you know, for a single ecosystem, be it Indy or JSON-LD or UPort, right? And so I think the combination is probably a good start. So explaining the external formats is good, and then externally document them. I think would be another really good step there.
One note is that the original authors of the RFCs, my team, but they're able to attend the morning calls, but not this call. So if we want their involvement, then we need to shift this conversation to the one where we can have that, or where you have a time zone that works for them. But we've, you know, this started as an indie hype and moved to Aries. We only submitted the accepted change because over the last two calls, people said, why hasn't anybody submitted it, the PR, to make it change that status? But we've moved on to implementing this at this point. And if other people want to modify it or raise issues against it, that's fine. But we can't expect Nikita and Sergey to come up to speed on the current conversations unless we make a deliberate effort to pull them in.
I don't know that anyone is seeking to change it so much as is to increase the documentation about it. But your point is well taken, that if we would like them to be involved, we've got to do a little bit of a better job there.
Or somebody else can take the baton. I know Stephen Cran has made a bunch of changes. Other people have made a lot of changes to this document since we originally proposed it. So it's reasonable to say the authors of the RFC should be the ones that make the changes, except in this case, those authors are doing other things and have been for months, because this has been a very long process.
Yeah, the timing of this was semi-unfortunate with a handful of other work items that delayed conversation on it. But I think we have one very actionable item, which is explain the externalization of the formats. And the second one is that for particular instances, Indy is obviously an initial one here. There does need to be a place where that's actually described. And it may be that team chooses to say, well, here's the format, but really what you do is you call this Indie SDK library method. That's one method of doing so, and that would be at least a start to what we're talking about. So it sounds like the actionable thing that we need to do, George, to help you feel better about this is to include a language that explicitly separates or explains why we're not detailing those inner formats in this RFC. Does that sound acceptable?
That would be a start. I mean, I can say with more certainty once I actually read the text that will be added.
Okay, we could do that. The other request that I'll make of you, George, is that if you have an objection, the more clearly you can articulate exactly what about it bothers you, the easier it's going to be able to respond and solve that.
Okay, sure, will do. Thanks.
Perfect. I suggest that we log an issue right now saying we need to justify the tack that we're taking in this RFC, and that issue then stays open until the RFC, or until somebody proposes a PR that would fix it, and we reset the deadline on moving the status of this contingent on closing the ticket.
That's a smart idea. I second that.
By doing it right now, what are you implying? That someone does it in the background right now?
Any one of us could just go log a ticket right now, because what we've had so far is a verbal interaction. I'm trying to create a paper trail. We have a ticket that says we need to improve this aspect of the RFC. That's something concrete. And until that ticket is resolved, there's no two-week countdown happening on moving this to accepted status.
One quick question. What's the issue number on the one that's calling for acceptance? I can't seem to find it.
It's not an RFC. Issue. It's a PR, isn't it?
It's a PR.
Right. Okay.
So we have two changes. One is an issue. Do we have any volunteers to go make the issue?
I'll volunteer to do it right now if nobody else is doing it already.
Okay. The second thing that we need is an update to the PR that references the ticket. That might just be a follow-on task, and it shouldn't take very long. But those are the two things we need to do to create that paper trail, Daniel, and I think that's an excellent suggestion.
This is Troy. Sorry, I just missed the point about what the version numbers are supposed to be on a newly accepted protocol. That was one question. And the other one is, I agree with your points that these protocols should separate the payloads so that it can work in other ecosystems. So I agree with Daniel and Sam.
On the protocol numbers, Did you have a specific concern there?
Inside the protocol on the message, I think there was a discussion about, you know, is it like 1.0 or not 1.0 when you move to accept it? I think I just missed what the conclusion to that was.
Yeah, we actually didn't discuss that, but that's a good point. I had forgotten about that question. From that thread, it seemed like Stephen Curran is expecting this to be a 1.0 release for this RFC. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate.
Sam, since you're controlling the screen, could you browse to RFC 5 for just a minute?
Yes. It's not there. There it is. Wait.
I'm sorry, five? Not 5, 3 protocols.
Okay. There we go.
Okay, so inside of the protocols RFC, there is a document about semantic versioning. I think it's lower down. There's a link to some like additional references. Scroll down through this a bit. Keep going. A reference. Okay, so SemVer rules for protocols. I don't think very many people are aware of this, but this community has adopted a formal rule about how the versioning of protocols is supposed to work. And so I would suggest that people go read this and then ask the question after they've read the document. But the summary is essentially, we're trying to follow SemVer, and you can introduce non-breaking changes to a protocol by adding fields or whatever to a message type. That's no big deal, but you do have to, you know, use a different major version if you introduce a breaking change. And before the community accepts something, it probably shouldn't be labeled 1.0. I think some of our early work probably labeled things 1.0 too early. So that's kind of the summary.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I didn't see that yet, so I'll take a read through on that document. Thanks.
Yes, and then anything that if you have objections to the way it's currently being done, then we can raise that and figure out what the adjustments need to be made. If anyone is curious, there was a 0.1 release of the protocol that was created in order to enable some sort of rapid collaboration right before the previous IW. And it was named 0.1 on purpose so that there was a target, but then it would be easily differentiable from whatever we came up next. So we don't necessarily have to go to 1.0, but we should be, of course, move to something different than 0.1 to differentiate from that. Any other issues that we want to bring up about this one particular RFCPR to promote these? We've got two active things going on. Is there any other issues that anyone wanted to bring up? Okay, and thank you to those that are Daniel for bringing up and creating tickets or creating issues to resolve these. Part of the reason of having a public discussion and a waiting period for the promotion of these is to make sure that they get surfaced and that any objections do get heard. So the reason why we're having this discussion now is very much a function of the process that we have, so that we can resolve those issues before we get there.
We talked extensively about 36. Did we want to talk about 37 at all?
That's a good question. So I have a tab somewhere with 37 in it. I don't know. We haven't really discussed 37. This is the corresponding, it's mad. Nice. Because I didn't name it the right thing, or I didn't change everything else. So 37 is the corresponding RFC to present the proof after it's been issued, and we haven't actually talked deeply in this community, or at least in the calls, about this. It looks like we do have a broken link in here for the choreography diagram for that RFC. But we should probably, as a group, unless anyone has any comments today, which I'll pause in a second, we should probably go take a look at this, since that's under consideration at the same time. Anyone want to bring something up about 37 present proof right now?
Does it fall under some of the same concerns that George raised a little bit earlier on 36?
I expect so, because we have the same attachment style. And we also have, of course, the 1.0 release. So both of the prior issues, I think, relate to both.
Yes, they do. I wasn't aware that they were being proposed to be moved to accept it. But I have read through this one as well before, and yes, it shares the same points.
Gotcha. Okay. Daniel, have you already submitted the PR?
Or the ticket issue?
It's ticket number 168. So the ticket is in there. Nobody has written a PR to address the ticket yet, but at least we've documented it now.
That's what I meant. I'll go add a comment in there that says it pertains to both of these.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thanks, Kyle. Other discussion items before we move along to 95. Okay. 95 is the basic message protocol, and I am proposing that it is moved to accepted. There's a 2-week deadline that's been listed here in the top, and that can, of course, be changed if there are other things that need to happen. The basic message protocol is on purpose. I hit the view file button, which I don't like. This one is fairly simple, and there's lots that is out of scope for this, if you have not seen it before. And it has some very limited applications of some things. But there are quite a number of implementations for this, which is why I'm proposing that we move this to accepted. It should be it already says, this is my PR, of course, that we move it to accepted. It's already been demonstrated. We have a lot of these things. And so this is the 2-week waiting period for this. Are there any comments about the basic message protocol as it relates to moving to the accepted status?
I'm pretty comfortable with this protocol. I think it's fine. I like the fact that it says what's out of scope at the top so that people don't run into this and think, well, why doesn't it have feature X and Y and Z? Well, because we deliberately tried to make something basic and it says so.
Yes. My reason for doing so was that it's a lot easier to implement this. There's literally one message in the protocol. And it's deliberately, there's very few implications for implementing this. And so that was on purpose. This played a role. Phil Winley had a blog post and some experiences based on the IW demos. And this played a role in the bat phone concept. They were able to message each other. And the protocol they used was basic message protocol that was actually implemented by, I think they were using the Street Cred mobile app to do so. That's been there. Okay. Any other comments? And then if there aren't any, really, we're just going to wait out the waiting period, see if anyone else shows up to say anything about it, and then we'll go ahead and move it to accepted. Okay. If you have issue, please bring it up and make a comment in that PR for the status change. Excellent. Next on the list, are there any other RFCs that we should be talking about today that I haven't brought up here? In the future, we would like to talk about RFCs and move things along to make sure that we're coordinating and bringing up issues that need to be brought up, and we can figure out whether we need to create issues or how to resolve the things that we have. So if there are RFCs that you are the author of, or RFCs that you're not the author of, but you would very much like to see move along the process, please raise your voice and say, hey, here's something that we need to be working on. You're being willing to present about it or have, you know, lead a discussion on it in this meeting would be helpful. And that's the discussion of RFCs of this nature. I think probably should, at least normally take top priority in our meetings so that we can move these things along, and it gives us more fixed targets to, as we're building our implementations. So I plan to have every week some progress of RFCs as we need to discuss them so that we can move them along as appropriate for the topics they address. Okay. Sounds like, Daniel, we are ready to have a little bit of a demo. Are you ready for that?
I sure am.
Let me stop sharing if the button would stop moving. There we go.
All right, so I assume you can see my screen?
Yes, I see your screen.
Okay. So with the test suite and the indie agent test suite before it, we've kind of always had an issue of exactly how we bootstrap communication between the agent under test and the test suite so we can start verifying that they are communicating in the way that we expect. So this is the predefined identities RFC that Daniel Hardman proposed a bit ago. And the idea that we're kind of using today to establish that bootstrapping step for communication is not explicitly defined in this RFC, but we kind of saw this and thought, hey, this would be a really good use in the test suite. So the predefined identities RFC defines identities that are to be used in development or testing, ones that have their secrets publicly known so we can kind of anticipate them and use them to develop, of course. So what we did, I'll go ahead and show you some of the code here, is essentially created a predefined identity for the test suite and the test subject. So on the left side of my screen here, this is the ARIES protocol test suite.
Hey Daniel, we're still seeing the RFC.
Oh, interesting. Really?
I see. Good for me. I think Sam's screens were the problem.
Okay. I see. Just slow. Never mind. Thanks, everybody.
Good. I was about to be worried because I don't know why that would have been otherwise. So on the left side, we have the ARIES protocol test suite, and I am creating an identity. And what I've decided to use as the seed for this identity is just the SHA-256 of ARIES-protocol-test-suite. I figured that was a good idea. If anybody thinks otherwise, I'm happy to change it to whatever they think makes sense. But this just seemed like an easy way to get that hard-coded value. And then on the reciprocating side for the test subject, it's similar, just SHA-256 of the string ARIES protocol test subject. So using this fixture here, this provides the protocol tests with a predefined communication channel essentially to talk to the agent under test. So this does, of course, mean that agent implementations who are wishing to test against the protocol test suite would need to use these predefined identities if they want to get some of the more advanced capabilities of the test suite. For instance, previously we had manual connection protocol testing going on where you'd literally have to copy a string and paste it into the test suite in the terminal and hit enter, and then that would help bootstrap the communication there. Using this, the predefined identities, we can skip that step and automate it completely. Let's see. So this is basically what I just explained. Instead of requesting the invite string for the connection protocol be pasted into it, it's actually creating a message and then sending it via the predefined identity communication channel to the tested agent, upon which it responds through the same channel, and then they can kind of bootstrap the communication from there. So just to demonstrate that working. So here I have
an agent based off of the static agent library that just is super simple. It will pass the connection protocol test using essentially hard-coded values, but it was, I think it's good for demonstration purposes. So we're listening on this side now, and then this is the protocol test suite. I'm pointing it to my configuration, and I'm going to run the connection auto feature, and we'll see what it spits out. So here it requested the creation of an invite. I also kind of took liberties here and just came up with the message. We can have discussions on exactly what needs to happen there, but yeah, so now it's going through the connection protocol without any user input. And as we can see, we have now passed. So that's about all I had to demo. This is not currently merged into upstream of the Aries protocol test suite. This is all just local at the moment. But to this point, are there any questions for questions, concerns for how this is working, opinions on needed changes, whatever? I'm happy to take any questions right now.
I think this is a nice enhancement, Daniel. Good job. I suspect that in order for the test suite to be usable outside of an indie context, in other words, for an agent that's not using ED25519 keys, we're going to have to define that identity to have a particular, you know, set of key pairs for other environments as well at some point.
Gotcha. That is a good point, and happy to take whatever steps necessary when we come to that bridge.
Okay.
Yeah, so just to clarify, so that's assuming that both agents use the same key type. So is there a protocol to walk down to one that is acceptable to both parties?
So the way that this would work is that we would publish a DID doc for this predefined identity, and that DID doc would have multiple keys in it, and whichever keys are needed by the other party would be the keys that you would have to use. I don't know, you're asking a question that I've never really thought about. Is there a way that two agents can say, look, these are the keys I want to use when I talk to you in some kind of a formal dance? The way I had imagined it would work is that you read the other party's DID doc and see that, you know, that they're supporting two different key types. And so you pick a set of keys that you want to use in the credential exchange, or excuse me, in the DID exchange protocol that matches the type that they are wanting. Maybe we need to update the DID exchange protocol so that you can specify what kinds of keys you prefer from the other party.
Yeah, and I think we talked before about whether or not to flag that in the DID document versus in the DID communication protocol.
So I have a suggestion for to support testing, that you add some kind of a mode when you're bootstrapping that's like a promiscuous mode, so that you accept keys in testing to bootstrap to different things, but put it in that mode, and then so that the user interaction can be, you know, so selectively, you know, encouraged or not, depending on whether you have to formally accept keys or recognize keys, or you just accept them because you're in a testing mode. So, you know, in the test environment that you're not going to be seeing anything other than the other test entities.
So Sam, let me dig into that a little bit, because I think I understood what you're said and I think I like it, but let me say it back to you and you can tell me if I got it wrong. Rather than necessarily leaning on a predefined identity to just accept new stuff as it shows up when you're in a testing mode in order to make that happen. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
One of the complications there is that you, in order to not create some alternative bootstrapping process, you need to be able to send a message in that is already wrapped in the encryption envelope for the destination. And that's hard to do if you don't know who they are yet. And so the advantage of using the predefined identities was that the very first message over, of course, you would only enable the predefined test identities in a testing mode, right?
Yeah.
You would start your agent up with like a dash dash, you know, test me now or something. And then it would, enable these predefined identities. But when you do that, it allows you to receive the very first message without any kind of a bootstrapping step, which simplifies the process of enabling that communication.
Yeah. I understand that. Well, yeah, maybe some combination, you know, it's just an idea. Sometimes you get into these bootstrapping problems with protocols where it becomes really difficult to write tests for places well into the protocol because the bootstrapping is hard. But some well-known identities, or at least identities defined in the test, will work as well, and maybe some combination. I don't know. It's just an idea occurred to me as you're discussing it.
No, it's a good one, and we talked about that initially. But the problem is that then you have some special message type that arrives because it doesn't show up encrypted, and then you have to sort of enable these weird things. And so this was then Daniel published the predefined identities thing, and we thought, oh shoot, we can just bootstrap, use this to bootstrap right into something.
That's a good idea as well.
Yeah. No, but certainly having light of testing modes and things that might be acceptable in those aren't a bad idea. There is an implication in doing so that in order to be testable, you have to tell your agent to accept the predefined identities or to enable those predefined identities. The good news is that those are fixed under the published predefined identities. The bad news there is that it is a minor deviation in normal flow, but I feel like it's the smallest one possible to accomplish our goals. But there is that implication.
No,
Sam, you muted just after you started to say something.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I suppose that could be the mode. The mode just allows you in testing to accept predefined identities, and it's normally turned off.
On the message types or the key types, it's possible that we have a predefined identity for the agent under test. We have several, one for each key type. And then, you tell the test suite in some trivial manner, hey, it's key type A or key type B, and then it knows to anticipate the key type on the other side. So that may be something that we could do there. And that would avoid that same, we might solve that key negotiation step anyway, but it might be useful to avoid the key type negotiation, at least for the purposes of testing. So having one key type per might be useful in that case.
Is this an open discussion at this point, or you're still?
Well, it's any future topics for Daniel here. We should round that conversation out.
Well, you mentioned something about doing something on resolving next week. Did resolution? Did I hear that right? That the morning call next week was going to talk about a did resolution RFC or something like that, or did I mishear that?
I'm trying to remember precisely what he said. Richard, was did resolution on your list for next week?
Sorry, you caught me multitasking and not paying attention. What was the question?
Sam asked, go ahead and re-ask it, Sam.
I overheard somebody say something about that next week's morning Aries working group call was going to talk about a DID resolution RFC or something like that.
The architecture of an indie resolver and how a lib Aries shared library could be architected to be useful for people.
So I have a question about that, because there's this, the W3C draft, you know, community group report that Marcus Sabadello and Dmitry Zagudulin wrote on DID resolvers. I've in a discussion with them on some issues that I have with the state machine in there, that I don't think it will, it's going to be a non-compliant, I mean, compliant DIDs will be thrown out by the resolver. And so if I'm just trying to figure out if that discussion is part of, would be entailed in what you're talking about, because I think there's a mismatch in terms of some of the stuff that's going on in the DID resolution space versus the DID spec space.
That's good to be aware of your concerns. Marcus presented his proposal in this call in late June, early July, and yeah, we did that as the basis for some of what we're working on. And so currently our main question is, how do we want to handle multi-threading and asynchronous calls in the library? And once that's resolved, then we'll need to go into the next phase of the architecture and think about.
You're actually not talking about the spec, but you are talking about asynchronous. But so correct. When that happens, will it be in the context of the W3C, or will it be an ARIES version of DID resolution RFC?
I think our goal is to make sure whatever we do is W3C compliant, but that's a question for future time. I don't know. I can add it to our list to make sure we discuss it explicitly.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's a good suggestion. I was unaware of that, a lot of those issues.
Sam, I haven't seen this email. I'm behind my email.
I actually misunderstood something from a couple of weeks ago on the there was something in the Aries thing that I thought had to do with using DIDs in a way. And so I went through the DID spec and the DID resolution spec, specifically with the query string on a DID. And as I tried to match the two specs, I came up with, so I wrote like a multi-page document on it that's actually an issue in the Aries repo. Let me see if I can find that issue. And then Marcus responded, and there's a discussion going on in that issue. Let's see. Let me go to the...
So, playing the moderator card, is this a longer discussion we need to have, or is this...
I think it's a longer discussion we need to have. I think there is a divergence happening between the DID spec and the DID resolution spec because of some underlying assumptions that the DID resolver people are making about DIDs that don't match with what other people are making about DIDs. And so...
So this is a good conversation to have.
Those need to converge, or we're going to have problems.
So right, why don't we pause this for just a few minutes and bring it back up in the general conversation section of the agenda?
Okay.
We have one more topic. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm just going to post it in the chat, and you guys can look at it.
Okay. Well, and if you would, we want to talk about it in a minute if during open discussion.
Oh, that okay. Would be great. Okay. Okay. Well, that's why I asked the question. Is this the open discussion? Because I kind of
I misunderstood what you meant. But before we move along, are there any final comments on the use of predefined identities in the protocol test suite? Okay. I'm hearing none. If you would like to be involved in the protocol test suite, now's a good time to get involved so that we can be ready when it's time to have these conversations. So thanks, Daniel, for your work there. The next item on the list is not going to be long. It occurred to me that we had not as a community talked about what we expected for reliable message delivery from one agent to another. And so I wrote a couple quick things here. I have two questions. One is what people's general thoughts about this are. And the second thing is where does this actually belong? Does it belong as part of an existing RFC? Does it belong in a new RFC? Or how should this be brought up in the community so that it exists and we can design to it? But the main point here is that the agents talk over the internet, or other, you know, communication channels, all of which are lossy. And we should be able to handle a network disruption without just completely falling over. I'm positing that reasonable retry practices should be in place, and that messages can be retried either at the DID or the key level, in addition to the endpoint level. Meaning if you're trying to deliver to one particular endpoint, and it becomes there another option becomes available, or another one comes online that you don't necessarily pin message delivery there. And if another transport becomes available that applies appropriately, that the messages can also be delivered in that way. And so we hadn't really talked about this before. There's a handful of things here about, you know, message TTLs and other implications of that. Maybe messages can be thrown away because it's been too long and they're no longer relevant. Any thoughts about these, about this?
So I think that the parallel to email is an instructive one. Today, when you send an email, if the mail server of the recipient happens to be down, there's a bunch of retry stuff that kicks in. It doesn't last forever, and all of us probably have received emails where we sent something out and the other side wasn't responding, and we got a message back saying, I haven't been able to deliver this yet, but I'll retry for a while. And then eventually we get a message saying, yeah, I gave up retrying. I think it's reasonable to assume that semantics somewhat like that will apply in this ecosystem. There's already a message timing RFC, and the message timing RFC includes the notion of expiration on a message as a decorator. So you can put any message, you can decorate any message with information about expiration, and you can do it at any level of enclosure inside or outside an envelope, meaning that any party anywhere along the chain could look at a message and say, you know what, it's past the expiration time, I can just throw this message away.
I think the parallels there are really good. So, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, I have a comment to add. I'm not sure in your statement, and maybe you can help me clarify, for best practices, because, you know, people talk about reliable transports, and if you really need reliability, the only place that you can get reliability is at the application layer, because any reliable transport has corner conditions where the transport is no longer reliable. And so if you absolutely have to have an acknowledgement, and that means that you retry forever, you know, you may not get that in any kind of reliable transport. And so having some level of an application layer reliability, you know, or at least a state machine that says, you know, what am I going to do? I mean, you're talking about these things, but it's really that the application layer has some responsibility for reliability, no matter what transport lies underneath, because every transport has corner conditions where it's not reliable.
So Sam, you're totally right. And I added reasonably up here because it's not my intention to define the entire universe of reliable delivery. The point that I was getting to is we hadn't even talked about what are reasonable things we should be doing to try and deliver messages. And then any protocols that do need higher reliability stuff, we could solve that separately. But I feel like we haven't really talked about this in a number of code implementations, some of which I've also contributed to. If the message can't be delivered, like the endpoint just doesn't respond, the message just falls on the floor and nothing happens with it. And I think that that's probably not a good practice, and we should have some sense of what it means to try and deliver a message in some scope. And this will vary quite a bit, but we had zero discussion of this at all.
No, that's a good discussion, because one approach is the never fail to detect a failure, as opposed to trying to not have failures, which means dropping a message and not telling them that they dropped it. That's a really bad practice, because how would they know that it got dropped unless
you could? But and often you're the originating agent, and telling them means telling the user, but the user is probably not going to have any clue what that is.
Oh yeah. So in that case, I don't mean telling the user. I mean that if underneath you're dropping, a protocol is dropping messages without telling
the user. So that's handled already by the message threading mechanism in DIDCOM. We're numbering the messages that get emitted on a given thread. And so when you received the fourth message and you didn't receive messages 3 and 2, you notice that there's a gap.
And it bubbles up. There's some that bubbles up to somebody. Okay, so just detailing what those are so that somebody says, if you care about message drops, this is how you find out about them. Does the user care? I guess it depends on the application.
That's a good conversation and might go in parallel to this. So perhaps I need a different title for this to help convey exactly what we mean, but we've just never talked about this. And it's,
your experience for reliable agent message delivery.
Yeah, but reliable might be the wrong word here. Because I'm not trying to build in 100% reliable, and there's a lot of baggage when it comes along with talking about reliability. We're talking about good best practices on how you ought to be handling this. And we haven't talked about that at all. Is there a good target to apply this text to? Does anyone have any suggestions for where it might go? We have a couple of relatively thick RFCs about cross-domain messaging and everything else, and this didn't seem to apply there very well. I was having trouble finding a home for these concepts.
I think there should be an RFC about reliable delivery for a long time, I have had on my to-do list write an RFC about how to request a resend of a message. And that was, in my mind, I knew that gaps would happen. What do we do about them? But that RFC doesn't even make sense unless there's something talking about the issues you're raising. So maybe my RFC idea was just two paragraphs in a more interesting RFC that you have started.
The other concept that relates here is that I was trying to find a concise way of saying, you have a DID document. What is the process by which you try to deliver a DIDCOM message? And we actually don't have a great one on that either. We have some thoughts sprinkled all over the place, but not a good, concise, central place for that. And this should probably be placed in that discussion. So maybe the RFC that needs to be written, at least first, is I have a DID document and a message, right? How do I use those things to send the message? And this probably should be part of that discussion.
So Sam, that doesn't sound like an RFC to me. It sounds like a how-to. We should have a bunch of Aries how-tos, which are best practices for how to do things.
Yeah, no, this needs to be an RFC. The process of taking a DID document and deciding which endpoint to use and then sending the message should not be a how-to. That should be an RFC. Like there ought to be a legit.
It has to be an RFC is because it has to be done in a way that everybody agrees.
Oh yeah, but the issues that you're bringing up about what should we care about in terms of reliability and what things do we want to expose the user or not? That's a how-to.
Sure, but that's out of scope for what I'm talking about. Those are good topics too. But specifically, we need to talk about, okay, like what's this process like? If I'm going to write software, how do I go find out how to take the DID doc that I have and the message that I want to send to something on that DID doc and actually do it? And we don't have that. So maybe what I need to do is take an attempt at writing that one and include this as part of what happens there.
Can you just elaborate for me the how a DIDCOM message is special and how you quantify that or characterize that in a DID document? That I have a message, I want to send it to you, I want to use the DIDCOM protocol.
Yes. So the protocol should dictate, well, you take a DID doc, you find service endpoints, you use some sort of logic to decide which endpoint you're going to transmit it to, and then you get the endpoint, and then you're going to wrap that into an encryption envelope using some library probably, and then you're going to send it according to the transport, be it HTTP or SMTP or WebSocket or AVN protocol, whatever it is, and to appropriately package it and send it. But we've talked a lot about the encryption envelope, for example, but we haven't really talked deeply about how do I look at a DID document and figure out of the available service endpoints, which one should I actually be selecting and using? And then when I go to actually attempt delivery over that transport, there's some notes about like, oh, hey, if your HTTP request fails in these particular ways, you should like reasonably retry that, right? Like, I don't know, wait 30 seconds and try again, or try up to 5 times spaced by 30 seconds, or, you know, some sort of guidance on what is reasonable to do so.
And that service endpoint, how would you know that that service endpoint supports the DIDCOM protocol?
You see in the DID document.
It would be the type property of the service endpoint would say that this is a DIDCOM endpoint. Can you, Sam, since you're driving, can you click the link that I just pasted in chat for a second? This is a link to RFC 5, and it describes essentially what Sam just said. Alice wants to send something to Bob. So what does she do? She looks up Bob's DID doc and she finds an endpoint and a public key, et cetera, et cetera, but it's not detailed enough. So I don't think that we've not described this, but we've never taken the details that existed in slide decks and numerous Google Docs that have floated around and turn them into an RFC. And I think that's the need that we have. I think the RFC would be an expansion on the section that we're showing here.
Should this be a new RFC that this one references, or should we put it in this one?
We could put it in this one. I don't have any objection.
I would put it in this one because I felt the same thing when I read through the RFCs. It's like, okay, this really isn't enough for an implementer to figure it all out. I've got to go look in 15 other places.
The thing I like about this RFC is it's a good overview, and then here are details. We also have this agent transports one as well. And this contains, you know, hey, here's how to apply this to HTTPS or WebSockets or XMPP, right? And maybe this is the right place for it to go. I thought about this, but then we don't really talk about endpoint selection as part of this RFC. So I'm sort of inclined to stick it in a separate RFC that can be very targeted, talking about like endpoint selection. And then reference it from this one. I like having a top level one like this. That makes me really happy, because when someone says, how do I learn about DIDCOMs? I send them here.
Well, that's fine. I think then that we need to have how to's that take all of these RFCs and put them into a single place that you can see all of the things that you have to do in trained in line, right? Because every time you switch to a different RFC, the stuff gets lost, right? They didn't include things. They assumed that it exists, you know, and
so I love the how to thing. We definitely need to do that. That does not negate the need to actually.
No, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying that if your RFCs are going to be fragmented, then how-tos are extremely important. Sometimes you have RFCs like HTTP that are how-tos. They have working examples. They're detailed, and these RFCs aren't written that way.
Some of them are, but the need for overall sort of threat, you know, nicely led down the path documentation is valuable. But I'm still feeling the need to have some core thing.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Okay, and I'm not disagreeing with the need for like a nice flowy documentation, because RFCs are not great for that. But I don't think that we should necessarily try to make them the same thing.
I also think you should introduce dependencies to other RFCs. I mean, some specs could be used by themselves, while others would require other RFCs, right? So,
ooh, that's a good idea.
We've sort of done that under reference, but not specifically listing them as dependencies.
In the metadata at the very top of an RFC, we have a supersedes and superseded relationship that we're tracking. But we're not tracking dependencies. That would be a logical place to implement what Oliver just suggested. We just say, this depends on the following other RFCs. That might be useful if we wanted to do that.
That is a good idea. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a new RFC, and I'm going to try to put some of these things in it. And then if we discover a better place for it, maybe that's where it goes. But in the meantime, I'm going to try to write one that talks about endpoint selection and what to do. And it relates a little bit with agent transports. And maybe what we need to do is actually just expand agent transports to include some of this information, or at least heavily point to agent transports for, you know, how to you know, move along once you've selected an endpoint. So I will attempt to do that. Okay, so we have 7 minutes left. We talk about Sam's topic here real quick, and then quickly, what ought to be on next week's call? I will, of course, try and fill it with valuable things, but if we have requests for what ought to be happening next week, that is very helpful. Any things that you'd like to hear in the call?
So, this is Troy. If there's sufficient progress on the Aries community did topic, that would be lovely to move forward.
Who can present on that?
So Daniel has the pen right now for that one. So we'd have to hear what he thinks on when that could happen.
Let's see if we can present next week, because that would be a useful deadline. I got a note from Drummond, who is weighing in on this and trying to steer us a direction that we didn't think we wanted to go, that maybe I could talk to him later this afternoon. I'll see if I can make some progress, and Troy and George and I can continue to interact on the topic, on the issue. There's a GitHub issue that's tracking this that was logged by George, I think, or maybe it was you, Troy. Anyway, let's track it through that, but give ourselves a deadline that we need to be able to say something concrete by next week.
Just looking at the future topic section, I am not seeing anything that would be useful for mine, so it could be removed. Daniel Hardman and Steven have both taken the efforts on before I was able to get around to it. So thank you, guys.
Hey, Kyle, another good one would be... Sorry, just try again. Hey, Kyle, another good one would be if there's updates on that JWT topic.
Oh, yes. That can we put that one on the list? I have not gotten around to looking at that. I'm trying to bounce between about three things right now, and this community is only one of them. I'm also trying to balance the diff and then stuff going on internally, so I'm a bit behind on everything. But yes, we definitely need to talk about that and have progress made on that work.
I had originally proposed the conversation about the stats for language-specific SDKs. We now know the stats of the Go SDK or Go framework. We know stats of the Ruby one. It sounds like Java, Android, and iOS are all kind of stalled. Maybe we strike through that one and follow up later when we have more vision in what we want to happen in those areas.
I apologize. I bailed off real quick and then Zoom reconnected. So I'm back.
We're being just making an observation about the language-specific SDKs. Do you want me to repeat it?
No, I heard that part, but okay. I missed like the previous like 15 seconds or something. So is there something that didn't already take effect on the schedule? I see the IoT one.
The other one, I don't see the screen right now, but the other one was the JWT topic that we were just discussing. And George yes. posted in the chat.
Signature envelope, I added there. We've been trying to call that an envelope, signature envelope, an encryption envelope.
Did you get the JWT credential format? Like, what I'm thinking about specifically is how Aries is going to be interoperable with the diff interop project. Do we want to coordinate that in any way on the Aries side, or do we just want to let implementers just take a snap at it?
I do think we want to coordinate. We actually have a call tomorrow with a number of us, both in the diff and in Aries, to sort of figure out how to best coordinate efforts. So the answer is yes, but I have no idea what to say beyond that.
Okay. We can delay that anyway, so.
Okay.
So I have a topic. I don't know if the group wants to talk about it, but it's about DID Resolver and DID specifically with ephemeral DIDs and derived dids and the did query.
Are we looking for a vote on who thinks that would be interesting?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. We've only got a few minutes anyway. Let's use them.
Well, or we could do it next week. I can spend a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes on it, and then decide.
Yeah, let's.
I find the topic quite interesting. I went and marked it, I realized, as an enhancement, but I only read the title. So I want to actually go in and read through that entire conversation. And it would be useful to have a conversation on a call as well, I believe.
Do we have enough room for that and the Aries community did stuff next week?
I'm not sure. I was just thinking about it as a future topic at least.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. So we've got some next week picked. Do we want to take just we're kind of about 1 minute left. So I'm not sure we can really get into.
Yeah, just put that for next week then.
I just want to ask this question before we close: is this topic about something that the Aries community needs to do to stay aligned with the protocol, or is it a concern about the resolution protocol itself, independent of how Aries, implements it?
Both, only because some of the things that I think the Aries community is moving toward using, I would classify as ephemeral DIDs. And right now the spec would not allow you to have ephemeral DIDs. And partly it's to understand, to discuss that, because it's like pure DIDs fill a certain role. Right. And we start talking about DIDs being used in things that aren't heavyweight, DDO all the way down, to the roots DIDs, but DIDs that a DID resolver should be able to resolve and not throw away. And the DID spec allows those, but the community seems to be saying, well, if it doesn't fit this central thing that we think of, then we don't care about it, and those assumptions are corrupting DID resolution. And so I think, it's a prophylactic measure to not wall off those opportunities. And the idea of ephemeral DID has some applications that we could use in other ways in the Aries community that we have thought weren't appropriate for DIDs. It's like there's a can of worms potentially there. I don't want to do that, but I want to make sure that at least as written, the DID spec, that people understand that the DID spec allows things that we don't necessarily think are allowed. And if people don't recognize that and then they decide, oh, we don't care about that, so we don't care if it changes, then that's a concern to me, because I have some really strong use cases that are require that the DID spec not become too narrowly written in terms of resolvers.
Daniel, does that answer your question?
It does. I would like to talk to you offline, Sam. It might be worth talking to Marcus. I know that some of the push that's coming from the community on this is rooted in a perspective on identity that Joe Andrew has been a very vocal proponent of. And Joe and I know that we don't see eye to eye on that particular thing. He and I have looked each other in the eye and said, you're wrong. Yes. So that's fine. I think we can just agree to disagree, but thank you for sensitizing me to maybe the DID spec moving a little bit too far in a direction that would be uncomfortable.
The resolution spec is actually what I'm worried about. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, let's talk some more. And if not in any other forum, then for sure by next week.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to, we're going to calendar something early next week. I'm happy to reserve some time to talk to you, Dan.
I'll reach out to you.
Okay. So I'm going to put this potentially on next week, and we can clean it up. I'll reach out next week and figure out if that's a continuing topic. I do want to make sure that it's central to the main concerns of the Aries community to be able to take meeting time up with it. And then not that it's not a good topic, but there might be other venues that conversation might be better pursued in. So, cool. And with that, we are out of time. Thank you everyone for coming, and I hope you have a fantastic week. And we will see you next week, and I'll get the recording posted as soon as I can. Thanks all.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. See you.
See you.